Happy Reformation Day to all of our listeners out there.
Woohoo!
Yay.
500 years ago, on Tuesday, Martin Luther posted his 95 Theses to the church door of the cathedral at Wittenberg, however you say it in the original German.
Yeah, with a V.
And here we are.
I think it's pretty cool that we get the opportunity to do this 500 years on. I mean, we didn't start the podcast thinking about that, but it's cool that we're doing it, you know. Podcast that kind of touches on Reformed theology in the 500th year.
Yeah, I think he would be flattered that we have a podcast named after his movement. No, he probably wouldn't. He didn't want people to follow him.
No, this is true. Well, we're not following Luther, we're following Jesus, so that's
probably... Amen.
I don't know about you guys. I just wanted to do a quick mention of the Here We Stand part of Desiring God's website. I don't know if you guys have checked that out.
Yes.
Anyone who's interested, it's a little bit late to the party, but I'm sure it'll stay live longer than the month of October. You can go there and just check in, or you can sign up via email or podcast for a little daily profile of 31 different reformers. I think it's a really interesting little church history tool, so it might be worth checking out this Reformation season.
Yes, it is excellent. I agree. And now, on to the show. Hello and welcome to episode 99 of The Tech Reformation, where the world of technology meets the worldview of Christianity. I'm Ben.
I'm Craig.
And this is Tink.
This week, we're talking about read receipts, Amazon Key, and a throwback tech you should use. Without further ado, let's get started.
So, Ben, what did you bring this week?
Yeah, I brought the read receipts topic. First off, straw poll, do you guys say read receipts or read receipts?
Read.
Red.
Okay, great. So I say read receipts.
But
so.
They're not red, they're blue.
Oh, man. Maybe if you're on an iPhone. What color are they on non-iPhones?
I don't know.
I have no idea.
Tank.
Oh, okay. Well...
Yeah.
It should be red because it's past tense, but anyway.
Well, okay. I have two arguments on that, but we don't have time for that. Anywho, one of the new podcasts from The Verge called Why Did You Push That Button, which I'm not necessarily recommending, but I saw it and thought I'd check it out. Their latest episode was on read receipts and why people turn them on. And so it's like a 20 or so minute deal, and it was pretty interesting. Just a disclaimer, there's an F-bomb 3 minutes in, so if just a warning there. But the whole episode was basically like there's two types of people in the world. One of them uses read receipts and the other ones don't. Why? And it was pretty interesting. The most common answer for why people use them is the reason I use them, which is one guy said, it keeps me honest. Like, I want people to know that I read it so that I'll reply because that'll keep me honest and consistent. And then the other side of the spectrum, people most often appealed to either, it's kind of like privacy. Like, I don't want people to know that I've read their message. Because what if I don't want to reply to it? Then I would be forced to reply because I've read it and it would be rude. And then there's this really, really terrible and totally depraved part of society. Actually, we're all totally depraved. But these people are particularly bad because they actually turn on read receipts, send you a little read, a little receipt, right, for that they've read it. And then they just don't say anything anyway. And they want you to know that they're not replying to you and that they're doing that consciously, which seems horrible. But, there's those people out there as well, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know. This is interesting to me because even in the way you just described it, Ben, I haven't listened to the episode. I did read the transcribed interview with the researcher that they had on there, who's apparently done a study into why people choose to have this on or have it on and don't even realize that it's on and what they how they feel about read receipts in general. But like you said, to not reply would be rude. So there's a and that seems to be sort of one of the main reasons people feel like. Feel pressure in relation to this is that once they know that someone else knows that they've read it, then they feel like they need to acknowledge it or reply. And I can understand the idea behind that, but I also think, like, I have them turned on and I don't feel guilty or feel like I'm being mean if I don't reply. Now, maybe I'm just a cold-hearted, horrible person. Maybe it's I kind of look at it like a conversation in real life. Every conversation has an end point, unless we're all the kind of people who have to have the last word, in which case the conversation will never end. But in general, when you're talking to someone, at some stage the conversation finishes and someone else doesn't reply, you just finish the conversation and move on.
Yeah, you can't really turn off read receipts in real life.
Yeah, like, but you don't, but in real life, you kind of expect responses to things that need responses. So if you're asking someone a question, you expect a response that answers the question. But if you're telling, like, one of the examples I used was, you know, we're having a meeting. So maybe you're telling a coworker that the location of the meeting's changed or the time has changed. If they are in their car or, you know, on their way somewhere and they see it but don't have time to reply, then there's no, I don't think they should feel like they have to reply to that. The main thing is they get the information. Do you know what I mean? So I think that kind of feeling like I have to reply to everything that someone else knows that I've read is a misconceived way of dealing with interpersonal communication. Like, I just don't know that it's, I understand the pressure is real for some people. I just don't know that it's a well-placed pressure on ourselves, if that makes sense.
It seems to me like, at least in my own circle of people that I interact with regularly, there's a growing contingent of people who, because of the introduction of text messaging, feel like the conversation is continually going. And so it's like there's this expectation that if I say something to you, you will say something back, regardless of whether or not it was a conversation ender, which I agree with you that that is a category of thing. And I'm not in the group of people I'm describing, but I have had conversations with enough people like this to where it's like there is this sort of expectation that you think this text message conversation is just going to keep going on forever. And I'm like, wait, what?
Yeah. Do you guys ever delete text messages? Like, do you clear your text message inbox?
No.
Because I kind of feel like that's... Neither do I. I think I've got text messages all the way back to 2008 when I got my first iPhone. And I think maybe that's part of it. Like, it seems like with email, people... Some people, not me again, but some people are good at kind of clearing their inbox or deleting old items and stuff like that and trying to sort of clean it right up. Whereas I kind of tend to leave things just in case I need to search them in the future and find something that someone emailed to me a long time ago. So, I think that idea of kind of just leaving it there in this kind of, you know, easy to access and unfinished state, probably, yeah, you're probably right, Ben. That probably perpetuates that feeling of conversations always ongoing. But again, like, that's not the way anyone lives. Like, most people don't live with, I mean, I guess a lot of millennials probably would say they do, but, you know, no one lives with an IV drip line to a text messaging service. It's kind of, you do it when you've got the time to do it and when you need to do it, and then the rest of the time you do real life. So...
Yeah, I agree with you. Text messaging is not real life, and it certainly feels weird if it is. But one of the more interesting things that I heard from the researcher on this particular podcast episode is that the younger cross-section of people surveyed didn't even understand that read receipts were turned on for them, and they wouldn't know what to do to go find out if they were. So at least in iOS, and we should mention, a read receipt is basically just I send Craig a message, and Craig sends me back automatically a notification that he's read it, or just a little updated text that says read at, you know, 5:47 p.m. or whatever. And that's what a read receipt is. And they aren't just related to iOS. iOS has them. Facebook Messenger has them. Twitter Direct Messages has them. WhatsApp has them. That so on and so forth. And various services have different policies about their read receipts. So Facebook Messenger, I'm told, you have to send read receipts. There's no way to opt out. iOS defaults to turning them on, but in some of the newer versions, at least, when you get a new iPhone, they're on, but then eventually it'll say, hey, you're sending read receipts. Do you want to keep doing this? And it'll give you a chance to opt out. I also learned, and this is pretty neat, in iOS, you can opt out per person. So you can send just certain people read receipts and not everyone. You can do all, none, or some of the above, depending on who you want to send read receipts to, which I think could make sense. You know, if a stranger texts you and, you know, you may not want to, for the sake of actual privacy, not just I don't want people to know things about my life, but like I actually, for my livelihood, don't want people to know that I've read this because I don't know who they are. That makes sense to me as far as not just having them on wholesale. But I have them on by default for everyone, and I've never really had an issue with it.
I use them for, as far as I know, just general Android text messaging, at least mine doesn't do read receipts. In fact, whenever I first saw read receipts, I was assuming we were just talking about email, where they say, like, send an email and it says, mark as read, which I think technically is a read receipt. And
yeah,
sure. Looked in the settings, and you can send a read receipt for every single email you get if you want. So I've been having the context of email most of this conversation. But anyway, Yeah, on Facebook Messenger, I often will get a notification about a message, and I'll read as much as I can in my notification bar, but never actually click it so that I don't send a read receipt. And then whenever I'm ready, I finally open it. Because, yeah, I do feel like, well, one, it helps me because if I read it, if the notification's still there, I'll remember to respond to it. And I can just ignore that notification until I'm ready. But if I actually click it, I may end up just forgetting that I even read it. And then
that's exactly how I use them on iOS. Yeah, it's an impromptu to-do list. It's like I want, my desire is to reply to everyone who texts me, especially if I know them. Like, I just think that's a loving thing to do. And so if I have a notification, it's a reminder to me to deal with this at some point. And if it's like, I can tell from the preview, typically, like you just said, if it's something that takes more thought than just a few seconds to reply to, so I may wait until a time when I can actually put more thought into it and type out some response. Now, if someone's typing me long text messages, then I sort of wonder, why didn't they email me or call me or something? But you just can't control the way people contact you always, so... I will give, to conclude this segment, my twofold reason why I go with read instead of read.
I'm ready for it.
Yeah, that'll be good to finish on the important stuff.
Okay, well, the reason is that I send you a receipt when I read the message. That's reason number one. When I read it, I send you a receipt. Reason number two is when they were introduced on stage by either Tim Cook or Steve Jobs, I don't remember. Whenever they came into iOS, they said read receipts, not read receipts. That's it. I don't feel very strongly about that. That's just why I've said read.
The infallible, not so infallible, maybe, Steve Jobs has spoken.
Well, I'm a firm believer in authorial intent being the key to unlocking the meaning of any text. Ooh. And so I got to go with the author's intent there. And that's all I've got. Craig, what do you have this week?
I want to talk a little bit about Amazon Key. I don't use Amazon a lot. When I do, it's just to buy the occasional book or DVD or something. So I'm not going to be using this, but from what I understand, it's for Prime members, and it's a security system that comes with a 1080p camera and a locking system for your door. There's a few different models that essentially, if people don't know, I'll give you a quick rundown. You can allow an Amazon delivery person to digitally unlock your front door and place a box inside the door. When the door gets unlocked, the camera starts recording instantly and records the person delivering it. You get notifications on your phone. You can watch the video of the delivery on your phone either at the time or later on. And you can also set different security settings for different groups of people. So you can have family members who are allowed access, or they use the example of like house cleaners or dog walkers or whatever. My two cents is if you own a dog and you're not walking it yourself, you probably shouldn't own a dog, but that's a side note. I think the interesting thing to me about this is it's kind of a, we've talked before about like privacy when we're talking about drones and things like that, privacy versus security, and you know, all that kind of thing. This one, to me, is kind of like a convenience versus security thing. So, it's super convenient to have something placed inside your door instead of outside your door, because it's less likely to get stolen or to get damaged by the sun or rain or whatever. And you can just know that it's safe and secure. But it does seem a little bit like you're potentially opening up your house to not be secure for the sake of an item or a few items. You know, they're talking about they'll screen all their employees and make sure they're all legit, good people who won't steal anything. I guess the interesting part here is that this kind of falls into the category of Internet of Things. And so, therefore, this is no longer like an Internet of Things item that's within your house. This is letting people into your house. And so, I guess the question is, what does this mean for hackers and, you know, people who want to spy on you through the camera or hack the lock so that they can get access themselves or whatever. So I don't really have an answer because it's pretty early days, but I thought it'd be interesting to talk about and see what you guys thought of this new idea from Amazon.
I am the most excited about the indoor security camera for $120, which is really cheap as those things go. I mean, it's still expensive, but I mean, I think the best competitor out there right now is like $200.
So would you, I mean, I'm in our previous house, we've just moved house like 2 months ago. In our previous house, we had an alarm system with sensors in, you know, three of the main rooms or whatever, the main sort of central corridor, and then three of the main rooms. And I would possibly, like, I've always seen, like, the CCTV cameras and stuff that you can get from hardware stores and whatever for, yeah, $100, $150, and kind of gone, do I want to be bothered setting up my own sort of camera system, or would I just rather pay an alarm company to actually set up a proper alarm system with sensors and stuff? And that's me. Like, I'd rather just pay whatever it is, $1,000 once, and have someone do it that's then sort of for all time, than have a camera that's going to, you know, possibly die or be crappy quality or whatever.
You have or to be dangling yourself off the wall in a few weeks.
Yeah, or hang off the wall when the 3M hook doesn't last or something. Like, not that 3M hooks don't last. They're great, but, you know, when the adhesive falls off or something. Yeah, I don't know. That's interesting. But so you're keen on the camera idea, Ben? Because one article I read, CNN Money or something, was saying that they reckon this is really just a way to sell cameras.
Oh, yeah, that's interesting. I hadn't thought of it that way. As I understand it, the camera is the sort of smart home hub, if you will, for this whole Amazon Key service. So that's the way that you see who's wanting to get in, and that's the way that you unlock the door with the smart lock. You do still have to have the smart lock, but that's sort of the centralized computer brain of the whole system. And if I recall correctly, there is an alarm built into the system that you can fire if somebody, like, is posing as a delivery person or something like that. I think that they built that type of security in. To answer your question, I've thought about home security cameras before, but I just haven't done it because of the price. My main reason is not super practical, but I have a dog who we've been crate training, and who it's about time to let him out of his crate, but I still don't trust him. And so it would be nice to be able to spy on what he's doing during the day, whatever he's tearing up or eating or whatever. I just don't really want to spend multiple hundreds of dollars to do that.
You sound like a responsible dog owner, Ben. I like that.
Don't hire a dog bluffer. I'm not a security expert or anything, but yeah, I think the concern about someone somehow unlocking the door is a worthwhile concern. I don't know how hard that would be or how hard that would be to protect, but, you know, there's lots of, I think that's like one of the first rules about, like, cybersecurity is, like, don't say that this can ever be broken into, because someone will be like, challenge accepted, and then we'll go break into it. Although also that's a good thing, because you want people trying to break into your things so you can make it better, because if it can be broken into, then so in any case, it seems like if someone figures out how to break into this, that's a lot of, I mean, at the same time, all right, so first, if someone can break into this, that's a lot of doors all of a sudden that could be broken into. But at the same time, there's a lot of houses already that can be broken into by someone just kicking in the door or breaking a window. Like,
yeah, that's true. Sure, it's a deterrent at most, right? The lock can be broken. It's just people typically don't try because it'll take too long and they might get caught or, you know, that kind of thing.
And so in some ways, especially if it's not like you walk up, you push a button on your phone, the door's unlocked, you know, then it's not much less safe in some ways.
Yeah, I've had conversations about this particular service. You know, it came out over the last week or so, and just different coworkers and friends and family. And it's interesting. People's initial reaction is fairly consistent across the board, regardless of, you know, and I'm a developer, so I work with techie people. And even there, you know, regardless of sort of your place in all this, people basically reacted the same way. There's no way I'm going to do that, because there's no way that's safe. And so it kind of is a commentary on how technologically advanced we think of ourselves after all, right? Like, if our initial reaction to something like this is there's no way that'll ever work, we're not as embracing of new technology as maybe we might think that we are. I will say, to counter that point, if there's anybody who can pull something like this off, it's probably Amazon or a company like that. So I'm interested to see what happens, although I would advise people, and I will be personally being fairly cautious of something like this, seeing how it goes with early adopters, and then maybe adopting later if we were ever to do something like this personally.
Yeah. Just a couple of things to be aware of as well. I think that's probably good advice. It seems like the camera is always placed on the inside. So, Ben, you mentioned, like, it's how you can see who's delivering.
Mm.
Just to clarify, it seems like, yeah, you see them once they're already in rather than outside the door. I don't know if that's changeable. Maybe you can position it outside the door instead. But it seems
if
like
I recall correctly, one of the locks has a camera on it as well.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah, I hadn't noticed that. The other thing is the demo videos. The demo videos kind of show the door from, like, eye height or from, like, the ground level, whereas most security systems are actually elevated usually and pointing downwards. So if it's near your front door, you may only see the top of someone's head rather than seeing their full face and everything, which is another slight security thing. But the bigger security thing for me was that I talked about in our previous house having an alarm system. They say to use this service is not going to be hooking into standard alarm systems because I guess there is no standard. Different companies do that different ways. So you have to be willing, if you want to use this service, to turn your alarm off for the whole day that the thing's being delivered. Unless, I guess, you have some way of turning it off when you get the notification and then turning it back on again remotely from your phone or something like that.
That's a pretty big catch.
Yeah, that's a pretty big sort of caveat to be aware of. But it's, you know, like Ben said, it does in some ways depend on how, almost like how technologically advanced we're willing to be and what the trade-off we think is there for personal, on a personal level for security and stuff. So I'm interested to see where it goes. I think it's just, like you said, Ben, early days, and we have to wait a little while to see what happens with early adopters.
Hey, this is Derek jumping in here quick to point you guys once again for the final time this month toward donating to help out with hurricane relief in America and the Caribbean islands. There's been a lot of destruction, devastation with like four or five. There's been a lot of hurricanes that's come through, and there's a lot of repair and rebuilding that needs to happen. So we want to push you guys to spend your money on something something to help out your fellow man this week. So you can go to techreformation.com/donate to get a link to donate to Samaritan's Purse. They're an organization that we trust in, that we think has a good rapport, will do good things with your money. We don't have an agreement with them or anything. We just like them, and we think they're a good place to give. So give freely and give joyfully. That's what matters. Thanks for listening to Tech Reformation.
Tank, what have you got for us this week?
So this week, I have brought a tech you should use. So
yeah, you did. Throwback.
Yay. I feel like we're in 2016.
Yeah, so for people who may be a little newer, back in whenever we started, we would always have more of like one of our segments was Tech You Should Use, which I would just bring, or someone would bring, a technology that they really liked and wanted to recommend to listeners. And so I found one that I really like and I want to recommend to listeners. So this desktop app for both Mac and Windows is called Station. What it does is, like, for me, my problem, I guess, is I have Slack, I have Microsoft Teams, I have Inbox, and I have, what else? Like Outlook. And I have all of these just on my, like, as desktop apps on my computer. And so I have four different buttons for those. And, you know, and then I have Chrome, which is a browser, and then maybe a programming thing. So that's a lot of things that are open at the bottom. Well, what Station does is it takes all these different services and combines them into one thing that kind of looks like Slack. So on the left side, you've got all your different services that you've plugged into. So all the ones I just named, plus I have Calendar on there, I have Google Drive, I have Keep. All of those are on the left side. And you can just switch between those. It shows how many notifications you have on there. Messenger is on there as well, Facebook Messenger. And so really Station is just kind of a hub for all these different web apps in one place. And so it's cool because it more so than just a browser. You know, a browser one can go anywhere, and so you can get cluttered with like 15 different tabs all at once that are showing, and then lose the things that you always want open, like Slack or like Teams or like your mail or something. At least for me, I'm not always great with tab management. And also, a lot of, like I said, a lot of these apps I already had just on my desktop anyway. So now I have one desktop app that has them all combined into one easy location. And there's a notification center where you can see all your notifications for all the different apps. And so I feel like it has decluttered things. And my browser is now just like where I go for the many variety of things I want to search. Whereas, like I said, the things like mail that I always want open are now easily findable. So that's Station. What do you guys think about it?
So it's like a web browser or something?
Yeah, in many ways, it's like a web browser. But it's...
I feel like that's the pitch. So imagine a web browser where you could pin your favorite and most used tabs. And then imagine, kind of like bookmarks, but imagine that you had a notification center around all of that stuff and you could group them all together.
Hmm. Yeah, very similar to that.
You mean like at the moment in Firefox where I have Pocket and Wunderlist...
yeah. You can put those in there too. But it's like, it's, you know, a browser, it can show your favorite apps, but then it can also show whatever random other website, GameFAQs, I don't know. And then all of your different, like a forum and like all the different messages on the forum, you know, it's not dedicated to your favorite apps. And so it's very general for everything you can browse on the web. Whereas this is dedicated to those specific apps that it has plugins for, you know. And so because of that, it looks cleaner. And then again, like I said, I think the other big part of it is I already have a lot of those apps on my desk, like as desktop apps anyway. So they're web apps that I've downloaded and use as a desktop app. And so now this is... I just removed those. And so instead of, I cleared 4 things from my pinned, I don't know what those things are called. So on Windows, you have that bar. Yeah.
Oh, that's the task right. Bar, you don't bar. Have a Mac, my bad. You don't have a dock.
Yeah, yeah. So maybe a dock would be the Mac term, but a task bar for the Windows people.
Yeah.
So I've removed like 3 of those and just pinned Station now. And so it cleared up quite a bit of stuff that I would normally have open. But ultimately, yeah, it is just a glorified web browser.
Neat. I downloaded it earlier when you sent it over, and I was like, so it's like a web browser. Because I just pin the tabs that I need open all the time. But I only have like 3 of them, right? So I have the Slack desktop app like you did. And then I also have, I think, my timesheet web app, my... email. No, not my email. Man, I don't even know anymore. Oh, a Google Sheet and Google Notes. Google Keep. And those are just pinned. And then everything else is like searchy things.
Yep. And I think people with good browser management, like I've never used pins. So I probably would be one of those who wouldn't say I have good browser management, you know. So people who are already good at that and who like open their browser and all their things pop up and they're super happy all of a sudden. Like, they probably wouldn't need this. But for people like me, who I've every time...
Whenever someone's pairing with me at work, I spend a large amount of the time closing tabs. Mm-hmm. Because it's like, I don't need all these things. Why are these open? I'm going to close them. So I never have very many tabs open. And people are always like, why are you closing all your tabs? And I'm like, I don't need them. Why would I keep them? If I keep them, I won't know where the ones that I actually need are.
Mm-hmm.
So my life is a constant state of managing tabs. It's terrible. You've solved this problem with Station.
Well, your browser will still have lots of tabs. You'll just know where your important stuff is. But yeah.
Nice.
So yeah, that's all. If it sounds cool, download it, give it a try.
We'll put a link to the download in the show notes.
Yeah, perfect. It's called GetStation. One of those things.
Some top-level domain. Probably com. Who knows? If they're smart, they have a redirect.
That's all for Tech You Should Use.
And now into theology from the headlines.
If you would like to connect with us, you can do so by jumping in our Slack team. Sign up at slack.techreformation.com.
You can also tweet us at techreformation. That's our Twitter handle. We'd love to hear from you. Any comments or conversations you want to have, hit us up there.
You can visit our website for past shows and topics at techreformation.com. And check us out on iTunes and Overcast and all those other places, and make sure you recommend and share with a friend. That's how we get around to new people and get in people's ears. So yeah, help us out and share an episode.
If you guys don't share the episodes, then no one would hear about the show, and that would be sad. This has been Tech Reformation. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week. And I ain't looking back.